Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. It is 10:30 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a general discussion. Item number one is ordinance number 2017-002. And then item number two is assistant county counsel, one and two job descriptions. I'm going to suggest we go with item number two first, and we'll move on from there. So without objection, that's where we'll start.
And I think good morning all. So I think the real substance of this was going to be talking about expenditure of the marijuana revenue. And that's why we invited, this is the follow-on to last week's discussion of the job descriptions, when we kind of nailed that down. And then at the end of that discussion, it was decided
you want to go
that we were going to go ahead and advertise for the
position. Yes, please.
Anyway, so Sheriff, and well, perhaps not Director Schmeltzer.
No, she's not feeling well. So she had surgery and is not recovering as expected, so she's not here this morning, but I can speak for her program. The proposal that I gave out last week was the idea that in order for anything that we do as far as a new code or text revision is going to require more robust enforcement of current regulations. And so I don't think you were here, Commissioner Morgan, but the discussion was about the revenues that we've been generating off of the 3% and the local and then the distribution from the state, somehow utilizing those to do the enforcement to pay for it, because otherwise we really don't have a revenue stream to do so. And so the proposal is to add an enforcement person, a code enforcement officer or position. They're not an officer, just a code enforcement person, an attorney, help paying for this position in the legal counsel's office, and then a deputy with the sheriff's office is going to be, I think, that three elements to any solid enforcement of current regulations or potentially new regulations if the board, when the board enacts those. So that was just the beginning of a discussion. Nobody had really been brought in on that, including Julie Schmeltzer. It was just an idea that came.
Nor LADPC, who we had the board had previously said that those 3% we would allow the group to weigh in on how they were spent as well. What did the levy language say?
Commissioner DeYoung was actually going to say.
I was wondering because there has been an uptick in building permits and stuff, and that's directly attributed to the cannabis industry. Is there a possibility of taking a certain amount of money from planning and saying, okay, they're going to fund $25,000 or something of, say, for instance, towards the sheriff's deputy, or $30,000 or something like that? Because it is directly related to the cannabis industry.
These would not necessarily, that would be, you know, up for us as far as whether or not we see the connection. I don't. I don't see the connection between law enforcement and fees, direct cost of service. However, planning gets general fund dollars. So whether it's a fee dollar or it's a general fund dollar, reappropriating that seems odd. We just don't appropriate as much general fund and we move that over to the sheriff's office.
Other than the one deputy, I do not believe we can spend the marijuana monies towards that on the
3%. So the one deputy, whatever it takes, it's only $60,000 and it doesn't pay for a full.
I also wonder, why are we funding a deputy for marijuana enforcement when the state police just hired three detectives for that very function and is assigning seven OLCC inspectors in Medford
because they're going to regulate OLCC. That's what we heard from the inspector yesterday.
The inspector said OLCC, but they also will hand to the state police anybody that's not who will enforce the marijuana stuff. So why would we put, when it's not our job to enforce, why would we put a deputy just to marijuana?
I would like to see us have a deputy not just for marijuana, just like having our Marine deputy. He's still a deputy, but his focus is on the Marine side of it. Our BLM deputy, he's still a deputy, however, his focus is on the woods. And the same thing with a cannabis deputy, he's not strictly cannabis. He is there, but he's kind of like he's your local contact. If somebody calls our sheriff's department and says with a, not necessarily a complaint or an issue that has to do with cannabis, say yes, we have a cop on the beat, the guy that is, he knows the growers and he knows the clientele and he knows. He is kind of more in the tick for that than he is for just general. But he's still a deputy. He still answers to the sheriff, and go from there. And I realize that the state says this is what they're going to do, and they're going to do it. And I'd like to see how that works out. But still, I would like to see us have something from the county, because that's who the people are asking to do something is county. The state, they go, yeah, well, the state this and the OLCC this. They don't have any record of that working yet.
They also have been very clear that their focus up till now is getting people registered. Now they're moving to enforcement. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're putting 7 enforcement inspectors plus 3 detectives in the Medford office to handle Josephine and Jackson counties.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. I think more is better than less. If it's hiring a deputy and just saying, okay, his concentration is on the cannabis industry, that's where his concentration lies, but he's still a deputy.
Well, it doesn't have to be a marijuana deputy. This just says that it could be spent on public safety. It could just be paying for a deputy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be focused on marijuana.
Public perception.
Public perception is we'd rather have a deputy on the road, not focused and limited on one topic.
No, he's not focused and limited on one topic. He's a specialist in that topic, and he gets to know the people that are involved. But he's still on the road. He's still a deputy. Just like Ernie Fields, it can be pulled off of the river. If he doesn't have anything going on in the river, he's a regular deputy.
They have different things. They have contract requirements.
Let's not nitpick the elements of the proposal. It's easy to find holes in whatever. Enforcement is a really big deal. The topic is specifically figuring out how we're going to... the topic specifically is this County Council 1 and 2. It's morphed without an agenda item specifically, which is just fine, and talking about comprehensively how are we addressing enforcement. And one of the key components is having this attorney, because Leah is just bogged down with processing all of these, the current code enforcement issues that really don't seem to go as far as they need to. My thought is that barring any unforeseen, I don't know what the state's going to do. I don't know when they're going to get their people in here. I just know that I have a responsibility to people out there who want to see something done on this issue. And I don't think that it's, you know, an excess that one deputy, like the Marine is a good example, couldn't be assigned to the subject matter in Josephine County, being the crux of where grows are happening. And I'd rather put more emphasis on enforcing the bad apples and having good text amendment that guides people in the right direction and the good apples. So that's my proposal. That's why I came up with the proposal for enforcement as I did, because that hasn't really been discussed. Nobody's came up with that end of the piece of the pie yet. So the time to discuss it is now, as the revenue is coming in, whatever the level may be. But I certainly know that we didn't get a levy passed to, you know, expand the number of deputies dramatically. But there's certainly a need out there. So
I guess going back to the legal side, I have no objection to you having, you know, on the legal side of it, someone in your office that is pointed at the code amendments. Because that's going to be a real hot topic going forward. There's going to be a lot of discussion as far as variances go, appeals process, so on and so forth. It's going to go back through your office. This is just what we're dealing with now, what Leah's dealing with right now. Is just the tip of it. And as we go through the 23 text amendments that we were talking about, the first of the year, as we take these in groups and get it back and we get them all put into place, it's going to be a real big drain on your office. Yes. And I have no problem. Okay. If that's what we're talking about is what this means to legal, I'm okay with putting someone on in your office that looks at code enforcement.
And land use. Those are the two elements.
Yes,
I think land use and code enforcement go kind of hand in hand from a planning community development perspective in his office.
Yes.
Now, would road plugs, would that fall into the land use side of it?
Not at all. I wouldn't see that. I mean, it possibly...
It's land use related for someone developing a property.
It really has to do with the expertise of the person who he hires. It probably would fall into that because it isn't necessarily the thing that Leah knows backwards and forwards. Might not be street plugs.
It's not on, and maybe it's not on their list of things to do, but they probably could.
I thought we fixed that at the public works end.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the exception that we get asked about street plugs.
Yeah, I'm hoping that. So I'm hoping it's fixed.
Hopefully a system works. Anyway, but I think I guess I didn't pay attention to how this was listed.
I
think where the discussion left off was we were going to bring in Sheriff Director Schmeltzer.
Well, delegate
Commissioner DeYoung, and I think he had that conversation, and I'm going to follow up with Julie. I know she's in favor of another code enforcement officer. Her one person is not able to accomplish what the need is.
So. And from my liaison, I would like to see us have a deputy that would back up the two code enforcement officers.
She can't do anything without somebody.
No.
And a lot of times state troopers currently have not been available.
Somebody that knows the player. Somebody that knows the player.
Just to introduce one thing, there is a workman's comp kind of consideration here. Don't want to overplay it, but in terms of sending someone into a dangerous situation, we'll say it's nice to have a deputy working in conjunction with our code enforcement.
Absolutely. They don't go
squad.
Out to places without.
So,
you know, they make that decision.
Does that make sense?
They just need to be available.
Yeah,
you know, when he or she go out. And the state troopers don't work for us. They work with us. And they can be reassigned. They don't know the players. This deputy would be here. There's a tighter connection. It's just a proposal. But I think it's going to take a while in your office to get this moving. It's not going to happen tomorrow.
I would be, you know, it's just a proposal at this point in time, but it's something that you could probably put together. Matrix to see what it looked like.
Yeah. on the sheriff's office behalf, it's just a matter of really finding out what the county wants in the form of the BCC, what kind of an arrangement. I think we're adaptable to, you know, working obviously in partnership with code enforcement, with those things, and having some type of a liaison to that enforcement end of it. It's really just at the end of the day. I mean, we can make it happen. It's just really what kind of focus, what direction does the BCC want that to go? And that's really my only play into it, is once that's defined, then I can adapt and work to make, you know, those needs happen, all those wants happen. One concern I do have is the funding source. We don't really know how much we're going to get. We don't know how long we're going to get it. Is 3 years down the road going to be an issue to where we stop seeing some of those revenue monies? Or that's just one. It's a minor concern, but it's out there.
It's definitely a concern that I've thought about from a perspective of I feel like we're having growing pains in this industry. And so from a standpoint of revenues to the need, they might coincide pretty well. The revenues may not be there. The need may not be there as much. So I think we're going through a growing pains area of people needing to figure out what the rules are and that they're going to play by them. And then after that, may not be as necessary. And so I don't know exactly how that factors in long term, whether or not they're just absorbed back into your office. Do we have the capacity to pay for that? It kind of is. So.
Yeah. So the sheriff's office behalf, we can make it happen. It's just that what kind of direction you guys want to go with that really is where we're at.
Statutorily, what are the restrictions on the 17%?
The statutory restrictions that had been created by Measure 91 were lifted earlier this year by the legislature, House Bill 3470, Section 32, and so you have no restrictions.
Okay, so the money from the state can be spent on anything?
Yes, general fund at your full discretion, which hadn't been the case previously, so that was a recent change in the law.
So do we tap into the 3% at all, or just go with a portion from the state for these proposals?
I don't know. I don't know what that check is from the state, you know.
And we know the first one's going to be different than subsequent ones. So the first one was based on population. Subsequent ones will be based on the canopy and licensees.
The formula's different. I don't know if the number's going to change. Could go up, could go down. I don't think we know that. I know there's a need, and there's a potential revenue stream to fill it. And so these two questions are really important, you know, for you guys to start saying, yeah, go forward, let's job descriptions and, you know, get Arthur to sharpen his pencil and figure out how this works. The need was a year ago, so.
And I think the need is going to change after the first of the year. We don't know what next year's industry is going to look like following that's why it's in the forming stage, I guess. Because I you know, agree with you. They're going to, you know, the state says they're going to do all this neat and cool stuff, but.
Any other proposals on the table? Feel free.
So what's the status of the last conversation I was a part of had half of it being half of the attorney position? So if the clerk stays the same, the funding's there, it's already established. The adding the attorney, we had talked about half of it being paid out of building and planning. for land use such, and then the other half potentially being internal service fund or the portion needing funding. What is the status of those?
Unresolved at this point. I think it's still on the table in terms of how to fund it. Finance had also said that you could potentially raise, if it's even necessary, raise the ISF rate. He wasn't even entirely certain that needed to happen.
The ISF rate.
So it might be able to just be absorbed within ISF.
Changing it. There's revenue in ISF. I know that it feels like it's necessary, but between those two funding streams, there's revenue to pay for it. What we want it to look like is frankly more important to me, and you'll build the funding streams and the allocations. There could be plenty of money left over that we don't even need to tap the 3% at all for law enforcement portion of it. And LADPC can put every dime towards their recommendation. I'm not saying that my proposal wasn't to take that 3% and not give LADPC an opportunity to weigh in. I think there's definitely a partnership between what they're focused on and what we need to accomplish on their behalf.
Remember, their public safety is a part of LADPC as well.
Oh, I know. Okay. I'm very familiar with all of how this works. So it was just a proposal for enforcement, and somehow we need to address that. There is a funding stream. It will be paid for. That's not a problem for the next year, probably two. But focus more on what the need is and how we're going to accomplish that. Maybe it doesn't look like what my proposal was. It could look totally different.
Was your proposal in writing or verbal?
No, it was verbal. Just like this. There's very little that's defined. Definable. There really isn't. I mean, we're supposed to get our check sometime, and I think that's going to be a good indication of where we're going to be and having it funded. So, I would see for his specific thing, planning needs to pay for the legal services outside of general contracts that they use. It's not appropriate. ISF is not covering that. And that's frankly a change that should have happened years ago. So half of the attorney and his office probably should be paid for out of building and safety and planning. And then the other half from the dollars from the state for enforcement. I can see that. So that's what I would advocate from that.
Yeah, and depending on the cost, I mean, we don't know exactly how much monies are coming or how to divide them. But I think the attorney should be approved with the coverage out of IFS if it can't be covered by the other.
Okay. Well, we won't use general funds, in my opinion, and there is a reserve in ISF. So at least for the foreseeable future at the current rate, and I'm not in favor of adjusting it. So
I just think, you know, if we get back to the very beginning, I'm in favor of somebody illegal.
Okay.
For handling that.
Yep. That's lined up. We've made the announcement and applications
are the most important thing.
Being solicited.
Great.
So that's underway. Do we want to continue this discussion again?
No, I'd rather not. Okay. I mean, from a standpoint that you don't like to have conversations more than a couple of times, this is your first time, but it's not a crazy rocket science idea. There's resources, there's a need. If there's a different way to fulfill the need, fine. That's great. But my proposal would be that we would address this again on Thursday with basically approval of the concept and job descriptions that clearly define. I think this person, in my opinion, in your office is very similar to any one of your contract deputies, in that they're always available for your need, priority one, but that they're primary purpose is to fulfill this need on case-by-case basis is available. I don't even know if that's one deputy or if it's just a general concept within your office. I just know that you need to be compensated for, you know, external type of a new job, other duty as assigned kind of a thing.
Yeah, I think in building the relationships with OLCC and this new team down there, one person to focus, to have an open communication line, what they're doing, what are they doing in Josephine County, it makes sense to have one person that's kind of defined as that, in my opinion. Understanding that on often cases this is going to pull from some resources from the office because you're not just sending one deputy out to certain places. But that's, you know, it's growing pains too. in an industry that's largely unregulated.
But I think, you know, the answer that I have, people say, well, why aren't you doing something about it if we don't have enforcement? And Mr. Morgan brings up a very good point that enforcement from the state side is going to, you know, it's going to be kicked up an awful lot. That's okay. But from the personal side of it, when they call the courthouse, say, what are you doing? Well, we're relying on the state to do. I hope they're going to do what they say they're going to do. But yet at the same time, if we can put on one, you say, we have now a deputy that is assigned to the cannabis, to the code enforcement, say, the cannabis industry, and so on and so forth. As you say, he can deal. He's the guy that goes over and has the meetings instead of you or you know, Travis happened to break away and go over there. You've got somebody that's up to speed on it and go.
And I like the idea, in my opinion, that it isn't being paid for by county property tax dollars, that it's being paid for out of a revenue stream from the industry. Why are my tax dollars going to enforce something that wasn't an issue before? That's totally inappropriate, in my opinion, as a taxpayer, that they got to pay their way, right? At least that element. And so, well, if nothing further, we can address this issue again on Thursday, but with the idea of moving something, proposal, doesn't have to be this, but something different if necessary.
Do we need numbers as to what, you know, from your office and your office as to what that might look like?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. For Thursday's meeting?
Sure. I'll have something drafted and sent over to Arthur.
I think Arthur and I can put together a comprehensive package of the fiscal impacts and where those are going to be assigned, and that would be, you know, pretty solid proposal at that point.
With most of these, they go through JJ and HR as a job description and such.
Yeah, but a fiscal element is what I think Commissioner DeYoung was talking about, the numbers. So either way, they're both liaisons of mine, and I will prepare a proposal on Thursday. So anything else, I think?
Should we identify what the agenda item will be called while we're on the topic? Basically, how would
it
this
all
be
centers on code enforcement.
Code enforcement. Okay.
I prepare the agenda. I review the agenda, so I'll make sure that this topic is appropriate as possible. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Item number one is ordinance number 2017-002. So this is a two steps forward, three steps backward. Without Julie here, it kind of makes it challenging. You had proposed some changes last week, I believe, and so those have been, I have a redline version somewhere.
Those.
Me neither.
I have this summary email from Director Schmelzer that was just summary of code changes for Thursday's discussion. Is that different than?
I don't know. It's really tough to have.
I can print this so we all have it.
That'd be swell.
Yeah, that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
It's really tough when we're all, I mean, for whatever, we're just not all here in the same room at the same time to discuss the iterations of how this moves forward.
Well, I just...
I didn't mean to get sick, I'm
no,
sorry.
And Julie, it's same deal. It's
a week ago,
I
went to Julie's office and just kind of sat down and said, you know, these are things that I think we need to look at in this, you know, and we discussed some setbacks and so on and so forth. And, you know, the 12 plants, I you know, because 12 plants is personal use and so on, anything under that is personal use. I'd like to reduce that to 6 on or 5 instead of 12. I'd also like the setbacks to go to 75 feet from the property line, 75 feet for a structure and 100 feet for a grow, an actual grow, in response to the lady that was having her footings in her house. You know, she put the footings in, and she has a setback requirement for her structure, for her home. However, when she came up to check the footings and see how things were going on her project, she found out that right on the property line was a grow. See, that's 50 feet from my bedroom window. Why can they do that? So I think the setback side of it came down there. And it's just, you know, these are just things that were riding on my mind, and we just kicked around and you know, thought maybe, you know, I think you know, the grandfathering thing bothers me as far as the actual word of grandfathering, but, you know, maybe we could change that to something else. But
it isn't used. Grandfathering is a colloquial term.
Yeah.
It's a non-conforming use.
Right.
So, the setbacks is an issue that I have as well with the 300-foot setback. You know, the Williams CAC had come up with a proposal that they had believed to be a compromise between stakeholders, that it was 100 foot from property line and 200 feet from a neighbor's residence. And that was something that is from a pro-grow industry coming up with something that was an expectation of trying to keep peace between the neighbors. And I think that is a reasonable expectation that, you know, was vetted through a group that is pro-industry and trying to come up with, for somebody industry-wise to say, here's a compromise that we think is reasonable and appropriate, I think that should be considered. But it was 100 foot from the property line, 200 foot from a neighbor residence. And so, you know, one of the things I keep going back to is that the purposes of the zone is residential living in a rural setting. How do you accommodate that? Is you put offsets so that it's not so up in somebody's house, up in front of somebody's place. So you have the setbacks that allow it to happen with a buffer, essentially. But I think we do, I mean, you said 75, 100. We have to come up with something. And to me, I like this proposal because it's something that came from a group that was working in a community setting that vetted it through community meetings and also had pro-grow people along with folks that were upset with the situation, and they came with a compromise and presented it. Correct.
The only reason we came up with this, that I came up with this, is because, first off, you know, it was just me going to talk to Julie, and, you know, I'm not set in stone on that. It was just the fact that we had a 300-foot setback and so on and so forth. I have a problem with grows on 5 acres and less. You know, anything less than 5 acres. I have a problem with that, you know, strictly because, you know, we're getting out into the Leonard Road area, and now you got a 2.5-acre parcel and so on and so forth, and now you're crammed in there. Houses are getting closer together. You're surrounded by grows. That's what I'm trying to affect with that. But and I, you know, created a definition for commercial marijuana. Instead of saying anything over 12 plants is commercial, language is added to say that on a lot less than 5 acres, anything over 6 plants is considered commercial. Minor, but a 6-plant part may be considered a significant change. So
I'm not interested in changing a definition the state has defined. The state is the one who has indicated that the over 12 plants is commercial.
Right.
And so for us to have a definition separate from the state.
But can we have, but when they say they allow 12 plants?
It's personal use. It'd be you and your wife having a card.
Card don't mean anything anymore, do they?
Yes. Otherwise, you get 4 plants on your property. With a card, you personally can have 6, and somebody in your household could have 6, so up to 12 total plants. It's not your 4 plus your 12 anymore. It's a total of 12 plants, mature plants. With those 2 cards, anything past that is commercial.
And I hear
where you're coming from, but I'm not going there either, so. Commissioner Morton. Yeah, it's that's where it is. The threshold is 12 and 13.
Right. I just think that 12 plants, somebody got 12 plants for personal use, that is so absurd, it's not even funny.
I don't disagree with you, but we didn't set that, and I kind of feel like there has to be consistency. Yeah, I don't disagree at all, Commissioner Deering. Okay. It's just, that's a shift that's...
But it's not our definitions.
I think one thing that you have in here that's interesting is phasing out grandfathered grows over 3 years.
Yeah, one gentleman at one of the meetings brought up, he says, you know, I recognize people have a substantial investment in you know,
no,
in
I get it.
Residential. But where they can get that back in 3 years, and yep. They're phased out every year. They get the license up to 3 years, and then it's
And that's
it goes back to residential and they sell it for residential land.
Commissioner Morgan, any thoughts on that?
And I, again, apologize about last week, but the previous meeting before that, there was supposed to be a specific question about whether or not grandfathering had to be required or not. I was stating that if it's listed as commercial and residential, you have a permit for that commercial activity in a residential zone. But there was a question of whether or not grandfathering has to be allowed or not.
That's what the September 12th or September 13th, I think it is, confidential memorandum. It was admittedly quite extensive, but that's because the analysis is extensive. The courts have kicked this question around. We can put this back on for another executive session at some point if that would be productive for the body. Okay, let's do that. When I produced that, I really tried to keep it as succinct as humanly possible, but the question required 3 pages of dense single-spaced prose.
Not to wait for another executive session. It's a conversation that we can each individually, either if we have to,
perhaps
with legal counsel, or just review the confidential memo. But apparently there's an answer to that question.
Yes, I did reach a conclusion on that. And the reason I'm not trying to be real public is because in a takings kind of scenario, the county would be postured in a defendant situation. And so we do need to
get it right,
yes.
Okay.
Does that make sense, commissioners? So, yes, let's talk about that one.
So I don't like the idea of new grows on something less than 5 acres. I'm not sure I like the idea of new grows on RR in general. So do we have... We're still issuing luxes on that. So a lux isn't required for the new transition from a medical just to be tracked by the metric system.
What I was trying to touch on that is anything over 5 acres, for instance, if you have 10 or whatever out there, you could be out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. But maybe, you know, with non-conforming use that you send a letter to all the adjacent property owners and I'm a good neighbor and they all sign a deal saying he's in.
So I'm never in favor of asking neighbors as far as whether or not they're in favor of something from the standpoint. So this is just my position, and I will be opposed to any proposal policy that says we're going to ask neighbors about anything ever from the standpoint that people are going to be negatively influenced potentially by the applicant and their neighbor. You better sign that and say it's okay, or I'm coming after you. I will find out who didn't approve this. Get it? So I can't be in favor of anything that does that.
Okay.
It has to be something that's either...
I'm just going on like a variance process. So some of them have a variance process where you ask all the neighbors if it's okay if they move the house closer to the setback or some, you know, waive the setback. And it's just asking their opinion.
Yeah.
We have growers out there that say, you know what? I am a good neighbor. All my people are on board with me. Everything's fine. And yet we're going to put rules and put him out of business. And that's the part I don't like.
Okay.
On, like, say, anything over 5 acres.
I get it.
On five acres, anything below 5 acres, you're starting to get tighter and tighter and tighter.
Yeah.
You're going to have more effect. But if you've got 15 acres or 10 acres or 7.5 or whatever, you've got some buffer between you and everybody
else.
So
let's just establish an appropriate buffer and then go with that. So I think that would maybe move in Commissioner Morgan's perspective of like the 100-foot setback on a property line and 200 from a residence. I'm in favor of that. I think that sounds reasonable. And then I don't care. But you can't do it if you're under 5 acres. If you want to do it on more
than five. I have a question. If somebody has a piece of property and they've been investing in it, for instance, they have a greenhouse or a structure that they're growing in and it is already too close to, say it's 50 feet from the property line. Can they apply for a variance to leave that structure there, or are you going to tell them to tear it down?
I don't know.
Because I'd like to see the process there for what is existing.
So Julie's going to say that she granted the permit under the existing rules, and her opinion is going to be that she would like to keep it there as an additional non-conforming element to the proposed permit.
Okay, so it would be listing it when they fill out a non-conforming for a non-conforming permit, it would be listed to exempt
existing structures,
the greenhouse or just grand structures.
Existing structures are just existing non-conforming uses. Getting into your three phases, the 3 years of phasing out, is that on all RRs, or is it just on those?
Below, I think
those smaller than 5 acres.
Smaller. There, you're starting to get too congested, and that's where the closer people become, it raises that height of awareness. And you're on 10 acres. I'm just like, I don't have anybody I can see.
Are you tracking on this, Commissioner Morgan? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm looking at the last OLCC list that we received. I'm just curious how many are.
Do they say the size? I don't think they say the size. They just say what it's on.
No, but I do remember, for instance, we have one on Schroeder Lane that I'm curious because they live in Bend. It's on an RR1. We have an RR2.5 in Merlin. We have... I know that I've seen an RR5 that had a 4.7 acre lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the code where it says currently farm use shall not interfere with the neighbors. If they have that 4.75 and they're not interfering with the neighbors, I don't necessarily know that I care if it's 5 acres. 4.75 is almost 5 acres, obviously. Why it's at RR5, at under 5, doesn't make sense. But why we have RR1s and RR2.5s?
We inherited those. We don't make any new RR proposals have to be a minimum of 5.
True, I hear you there. I'm just saying,
those are old.
I'm trying to see what impacts are by the decisions and all that kind of stuff.
But if they're under 5 acres and you do the 3-year phase out, then they're, because we have a shortage of residential building sites in Josephine County, and yet we have people that want to sell their property and can't because of the grows, or they sell it because it is a grow. I mean, that's a two-edged sword there. But you know, when people want to say, well, I'm going to lose my investment, you're going to get your investment back in 2 to 3 years, whatever. You know, some people say they only want 2 years for the phase out. Some people say 3 years for the phase out. And if that's the case, you get your money back, and then you sell it to a residential. It becomes residential property, and you don't have the conflict between neighbors again. That's the only thing I was thinking about on the 5 acre.
No, I think it makes sense. I think one of the people that I met with last week had an RR that was a non-conforming, an RR5 that was below, and seemed like really good. Said all their neighbors get along, and it's fine. I think the 3 years provides them, you know, time for a business plan to say, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to go to a different place to do this, or do under 13 or whatever.
There is a mechanism to have your RR land switched to EFU, is there not? Or do you have to meet a minimum?
There's no way that I'm ever going to approve. It just doesn't happen. Oregon doesn't, we don't downgrade zones. You get, people are always applying for RR, from an RR to, or serpentine to an RR. I've never seen an application to do it the other way. And that's the norm throughout the state. People are looking for more options to do with their stuff, not fewer.
The people out in Hugo did that. That you, I think they had, they were RR on the 45 acres adjacent to their present lot, and they were afraid of a huge subdivision coming in there and ruining their farm-like atmosphere. So they petitioned, and it took them a long time to get this done, but they petitioned into EFU.
And now they're upset that the right to grow is growing.
Bingo. And now, all of a sudden, the cannabis industry is interested in EFU, mm-hmm. and that's where they really, you know, that's actually designed for them, their agriculture crop. They're going, oh my gosh, we want to change it back. And
yeah, I don't remember.
I think that was their conversation.
I've never heard of an example of an EFU going.
They did
to
this
an RR.
20 years ago, 25 years ago. So
I don't know of one.
Way before your time, yeah.
Yeah, and I would bet that they're confused. That's how sure I am about you. We don't do that. It just doesn't work that way.
Oregon's land use laws just don't.
There's a lot of things that don't work that way. But
they just don't go
said that it was a struggle to get it done that way.
There's nothing in the code about talking about what does it take to get from an RR to an EFU or a woodlot resource. I don't have anything that I can reference. Everything talks about the cubic feet per acre, your soil classification.
Going the other direction.
To go the other direction.
Yeah.
Our ICE, CIRR, our composite internal rate of return formula, doesn't work the other way around.
It depends on where you're living and what your concern is for the 45 you own.
Yeah.
They own the 45 next door.
You'd have to have an
RR5. And their concern at that time was... against residential.
You'd have to have an RR5 that was either 80 acres or 40 acres for woodlot resource or EFU, because otherwise you can't get a non-conforming. It just doesn't. You don't meet the criteria, and 1,000 Friends of Oregon would, file it to LUBA, and you'd lose because you're a non-conforming, and there aren't hardly any.
Well, I know it nowadays because of the expansion. In the Willamette Valley, EFU became now a premium because we run out of inventory of EFU, and that became a premium. So that to go the other direction now is really tough to do that, to go from EFU to residential, because they've done so much of that in Willamette Valley that their portfolio was really stressed. But that's been in recent years. That's been in 15 years, not 25 years ago. So I don't know what the situation was 25 years ago. That's just what they expressed to me, that they went the other direction and now they were considering going back the other way. And I said, I don't think that'll happen from the state level. They won't let you go from EFU back to residential.
They wouldn't, if it's the people you're talking about, they wouldn't qualify. Their soil classification's too good. And they can do cubic feet per acre. It's not gonna be downzoned. So... anything else on this? I think we need to really get Julie in the room and redline this and spend some time on it.
I did find a draft that she emailed October 3rd. It's not a red line, though. And so, I mean, it's literally going line by line to see what's different.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to compare it to her summary, but her summary starts with page 1, but then goes to number 2, number 3. It's not clear to follow. So, I mean, I kind of see because it's sections of 1 and 2.
Yeah,
that kind
I think
of thing.
I think she's trying to do pages because she's got a lot of 3s and 7s, and that's what her. That's how I reviewed it, based on those numbers and pages.
So,
let's review this, and then we'll reconvene maybe Thursday if Julie's. Let's just. Tentatively, because if she's available, she's not feeling well. She's hurt. It went okay, but the recovery is not going well. So
I have lipstick Thursday afternoon. Otherwise, admin, I'm here.
It'd have to be part of admin.
Okay.
At the tail end, we'll just have to power through it.
Wally, can you and I get together over that memo?
Yes.
So I can have my questions answered on that, because I don't feel comfortable answering these until I have those questions.
Let's do that, and then we'll reconvene on this issue.
But I think we're close.
I think so, too.
So setbacks, is that conversation we're having Thursday?
Yeah, I like yours is 102.
If you like that William CAC thing, I have no problem with that. I did we choose
7,500
because I was the only one in the room.
My priority is the residents.
I will.
That's a huge deal, so I think the 200 seems reasonable.
Well, it certainly answers Elaine's question that she says, now I got 50 feet from my window.
Well, the challenge is
200 feet from her window, she probably wouldn't
care. She's building a new house. Your question, what do you do with the existing grow that it's in or planned for next year? Are they going to have to move it 50 feet or 200 feet or whatever? That's what we have to, that's the hard question. So, okay, well.
I've emailed Wally, and on the blind copy you to the email from the Williams CAC folks, so you have the information I have.
Great, thank you. Anything else?
Go ahead.
I have something completely off topic, so go
ahead.
No,
I think we're
on this topic, appeals process. Is any of these, no matter what we come up with, is there an appeals process that can happen on any of these questions?
Oh, yeah. I would imagine.
I just want to make sure.
The beauty of this country, there would be an endless appeals process.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
That's the problem. Is it's just like every, you know, if we could go through every single one of these proposals and say, oh, this one works just fine. But no, you're having a real conflict with your neighbors. Your grow's way too close. I toured one. I think it was under that 40,000 square feet canopy. They had 861 plants. I didn't smell it, but I know from them, the owners, they're like, oh yeah, at certain times, and this was in the heat of the day, so I don't know at what time it really gets like cooking, but said at certain times of the day it can be really potent. And I think that's a big deal for people who are neighbors, is the smell of 864 plants.
But, you know, I lived east of the hop yard when I was a young person, and when the hops were ready to cut, it was pretty dynamic, you know, because we get that onshore flow. You could smell that. And if you lived anywhere near the mint farms, you know, when they're doing mints, get ready to pop, you get it the same way. So
yeah.
Those are the things that, but yeah, I hear a lot of complaints. Yesterday I fielded, I don't know how many complaints. It was all day long. And I know I had seven phone calls before about 2 in the afternoon. And every one of them was on cannabis, discussing cannabis and some of the proposals and long range, what are we doing, you know, on cannabis. And a lot of concerns. There's a lot of concern out there. And then, but I've got a staff that Ricky's put together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I hear 1,000 complaints, and I'm still very interested in figuring out what those spreadsheet on where what the complaints are, so that we know
what we should be going after.
Yeah, what we should be going after. If we've got complaints, you know, about fences and dog barking and stuff, you know, let's concentrate. And then we have, out of 1,000, we have 750 fence complaints, and we need to be worrying about, you know, focusing on the fence complaints so we get, and both people are complaining about fences. They go from there, and then we narrow it down so that we're not taking 7 complaints out of 1,000 and spending a bunch of time legislating. I think we need to find out what our true concerns are between the three factions, actually there's 3 involved in the room, and then figure out if that's what we need to target. That was what I would be interested in. I don't know whether you need to go to all 1,000 of them, but a spreadsheet on, say, the most current 250 or 300 of them, you know, right?
Because Denise is probably going to have a pretty good indication of what those are.
Who would?
So Denise?
Denise,
maybe
yes,
on
may have, yeah.
Thursday we ask her to come in and kind of help provide some guidance on that.
Sure.
Does that make sense? Can you?
I can line it up.
And prepare her to have those numbers if she could.
Yes.
She's a busy girl, I know that, but possibility she has those, you know, some sort of a cross section of what those numbers are. I just hate to go down, you know, rabbits chasing.
That makes
stuff
a lot of sense.
Definitely. It isn't going to work, you know, and it doesn't. We want to get, we have an opportunity here, a very short lived opportunity to do something before the first of the year. Because out of courtesy to the growers, we want them to know what the rules are going forward after January 1. But I want to make sure if we're going to change the rules and target a complaint, that that's the one we're targeting. And it covers, it answers the most people's question.
Did you have anything, Commissioner Moore?
Just a couple updates. I've been working with Congressman Walden's office and trying to work with Frontier about the numerous outages we have in our rural areas. There have been some improvements since Oregon's Office of Emergency Management got involved, but there's still some concerns. We're just kind of, I don't know, we're trying to make progress, so we're trying to get a meeting together for that.
I think I'd keep DeFazio's office, KP, and his office in the loop.
Okay.
Because Walden's representing just the urban 10 precincts in the city, technically.
Mm-hmm.
His background, and he did used to serve on
he's the chair of Energy and Commerce, which the FCC falls under, which is why he's involved.
Yeah.
But yes, DeFazio's office.
Just keep them in the loop. They work really well on that issue, so it's a good thing to...
So, a couple other things. DPSST, which is the law enforcement certifying agency for the state, is doing a statewide tour to kind of give updates on where things are at. Their tour in our area is Thursday at 2 p.m. looking at the calendars, you're the only one that doesn't have anything on the calendar because I have Lipsick and you're on your way to...
I'm going to Klamath for the ONC board meeting.
But it might be something worth having you there since you're liaison for Sheriff and Community Corrections, both of which have certified officers.
Okay.
And so I emailed Wendy the information in case you want to go. I just wanted to give you a heads up because I'm on Lipsick, I get the email. Fairgrounds, there's a meeting tonight and there's a meeting on Sunday about the kind of plan for the fairgrounds. Somehow it got on my calendar for today and I didn't know if that was anybody else's going. I wasn't planning on going because I have a 6 o'clock meeting. So I was going to try to go to the Sunday one, but I thought I'd ask you guys before if anyone else was going tonight, because otherwise it's...
I could probably go tonight. I'll see what it is.
And then, so mental health liaison, there's been a question as to my appropriateness as a liaison for that, because...
I've been questioning it since we made that.
I agree. I actually believe I am the best. I am qualified for it in that with 11 years working with their office as a parole officer, of which I assisted with the mental health court team, supervised the mental health court PO, and did different things. But for the last 5 years, I've also been a legal guardian of somebody involved in the system.
So what's the concern?
Options has stated that they feel it's awkward that
stated to whom?
The attorney that's assisted with that legal guardianship, that they believe it's awkward that I'm the liaison when I advocate for somebody in the system. It's not a personal conflict. It's nothing I gain from. I don't get paid for it. I don't receive any benefits through it. But it is something that I wanted to make sure for full disclosure that I report to you guys. And I do have a meeting with Carla this afternoon. Quite frankly, I think it's actually beneficial because I see firsthand how somebody going through the system is receiving services, but I also want to make sure that I'm giving full disclosure that I'm not dealing with
you
it without letting
on
you
any kind. So from my standpoint, you don't sit on any decision-making body associated with policies, performance, appropriations. When we had Jefferson Behavioral Health, that would be more of a nexus. Yeah, you are making decisions and appropriating funds in particular directions. We are so arm's length on that, there really isn't any connection. From a liaison standpoint, it would be like the liaison to the library. It's that separate, in my opinion, now.
There really isn't a connection.
I just wanted to make sure I let you guys know.
I feel fine about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And
if you have any questions, let me know.
Appreciate you bringing it up to the board, but
Okay.
Not a problem.
And we're still making progress with public health. Oregon Health Authority staff has been outstanding. I never would have thought I would have put those sets together. But they have come alongside and just helping advise us through this process and then the steering committee. So, and then with Deputy Director starting on the 23rd, just kind of keeping the process going. The beginning of November, we're going to be having some workshops that Oregon Health Authority specifically is going to be hosting that are the program-specific elements. Mm-hmm. So they'll answer questions of what is required of somebody who would take over these services in the county. So the people that may bid will be able to do this. We're doing this specifically before the RFP goes out so that questions can be answered and anything that would maybe need to come back and look at the RFP in relation to. So anyhow, I just wanted to give you a heads up as to where we are in that process.
Great. Anything else?
I think I've talked too much.
No, those were all important subjects that we wanted to hear. So, I think the schedule is pretty much what it is. We have a Wednesday weekly business session tomorrow night at 5:30. Pretty extensive agenda. Mr. Graves let me know as the chair that he won't be available. He's got a conflict. So I suggested that his liaison, there's some substantial elements of the airport that I know you're familiar with. So you'll be asked to speak on those on his behalf. That's pretty much it as far as I know. So I think that's the next time we're going to convene on any subject. Pretty much it. So we'll see you tomorrow formally at 5:30. Otherwise, the board's adjourned at 11:24.
Thank you.